Good morning and welcome to Dad's on the Air. It's Tuesday the 28th of August 2007 and we're coming to you from radio station 2GLF in Sydney. It can also be heard live on the internet via the live streaming to the world from the station at www.893fm.com.au. And in a few hours, it will be available on our website at www.dadsontheair.net. It's a perfect morning here in Sydney. You can just feel the spring in the air. Yes, it's only 4 days to spring and just 5 days to Father's Day. So this is our Father's Day special for the year, and we have a great show lined up for you. We have a great variety of interviews, speeches, and a good mixture of music to take us through the next hour and a half. We're going to be talking to Eric Burtz, a U.S. soldier recently returned from a tour of duty in Iraq, who has been busy writing songs about how the same government who forced him to put his life on the line to fight for the freedom of others sees nothing wrong with denying him the freedom to remain in contact with his children. We will also play a portion of the speech made in Washington recently by the creator of the British activist group Fathers for Justice. Our own Greg Andreessen was present at this conference and recorded this speech, so we're looking forward to that. We also speak with Colin George, who is the organizer of the annual Fatherhood Festival to be held this weekend in Bangalore. If you don't know where Bangalore is, it's on the New South Wales north coast, very close to Byron Bay, a beautiful spot. Now, this festival attracts tens of thousands of people each year, and if you're not doing anything this Father's Day weekend, head for Bangalore. Our music today will feature songs that not only pay tribute to fathers, but also describe what it's like to be a father this Father's Day in 2007. In the studio today, we have Ian Purdy, as always, busy at the controls, and if looks were anything to go by, if he was any fitter, he would be dangerous.
Oh, that nice thought there, Rock and Pop. Thanks for that one. Good morning, mate.
Also in the studio, we have our globe-trotting researcher, roving correspondent and technical expert, Greg Andreessen. Greg is the youngest member of our team, and he has been an invaluable addition to Dad's on the Air.
Good morning, guys.
And, of course, yours truly, Rock and Pop Peter Vandervoort, sitting in for John Stapleton. We don't know where John is. He took off in his helicopter yesterday. And he's not been seen or heard of since. John has a bit of a soft spot for the Bahamas, so chances are that's where they'll find him.
Yeah, under a palm tree somewhere, no doubt, being fanned by...
We don't really care where he is as long as he's enjoying himself and he's back in the hot seat next week.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll start off with a couple of stories that are fresh off the wires. I think Ian has got an important story there.
Well,
for
I've
us.
Actually got what I consider to be a smoking gun here after Attorney General Philip Ruddock's claims that the new family law amendments are actually of some positive value. This is an actual letter to a friend of mine who wishes to remain anonymous. I won't mention his name, but this is a letter from Legal Aid which reads as follows. Dear Sir, I refer to above and to my letter you dated 16/2007 requesting you to telephone me. Now, as you can see, that is a fairly illiterate effort and something that a high school child would probably get a D for if they submitted it as an assignment. It goes on to say, I note I have not heard from you. As previously stated, as of 1st of July 2007, the Family Law Act requires that you try family dispute resolution before going to court, unless there are serious reasons why it would not be right for your matter. If you do not contact us by 27th of September 2007, we will issue a certificate stating that you refused or failed to attend family dispute resolution. The certificate may then be taken into account by a court when determining whether to make an order referring you to family dispute resolution or to award costs against you. We hope you will take this opportunity to try to settle your matter without going to court. Yours faithfully, Amelia Yogarty Pham, conference organizer. Now, a bit of background to this one. My friend was separated from his wife in October 1999, and they first went to court on Valentine's Day 2000. The case was finally settled, with my friend, the father, gaining custody on the 15th of September 2005. So it took 5 years for the family court to fail to find a reason why they should give the child a son in this case.
It also means the case was wound up 2 years before this legislation came into effect.
Yes, at a cost of $80,000 to the father, whilst, of course, the mother got legal aid. So my friend lost his house over this. But at, like he said, given a choice between the house and his son, he chose his son. Now, the mother went off and began a new relationship in 2001 and has had three children to the new father. Her and the new father split in November 2006. Now, here we are in 2007, and Legal Aid has issued this letter harassing the father, who has not been in relationship with this woman for 8 years, into going into mediation, which is absolutely ridiculous. The main effect of this is, of course, to stop the father from moving on in his life. He can't get a job because if he gets a job, then he'll be ineligible for legal aid, which means that he'll have to shoulder the burden of whatever the family court decides to shower on him, as he did in the last case when he lost his house. And, of course, that means his lifestyle and that of his son is limited to what he gets from a sole parent pension. Now, this man, I can vouch for him. He's a good father. The fact that the family court awarded him custody, I think, attests to his fathering abilities. His son, who I know personally, is doing well at school. He plays sport. My friend coaches his son's cricket team. And this letter, this threatening letter, threatening him with costs 2 years after the matter was settled in the family court, I think is absolutely disgraceful.
Well, Philip Ruddock, we had him on the air last week saying that this new legislation is not retrospective, will not be applied to cases that were settled prior to this legislation coming into effect. So for him to be dragged back into court under the new legislation for an old case is going quite contrary to what Ruddock said. And look, what's good for the gander has got to be good for the goose. If this can happen, then surely...
If it can happen to a father, then why can't it happen to a mother?
Right. Any dads who lost a court case 2 years, 5 years ago, surely they can drag their partners back in to mediation to try and reopen their case. So this is really opening a huge can of worms.
Well, I consider this a smoking gun. This puts the lie to all of Ruddock and the Liberal government's claims that their family law reforms, so-called reforms, have done any good. It's basically empowered a whole bunch of bureaucrats, a cancer, in my opinion, to attack the spine, the backbone of the Australian community, which is fathers. This is simply empowered bureaucrats to attack divorced fathers once again, to have another slash at them, to have another slice at their financial pie, to give the lawyers more money, basically to empower the indefensible once again.
That's pretty typical. It's probably all about money and power and greed and so on. I think they just have, like you said, I think they're just having another go at it.
Yeah, well, they don't do this to mothers, so the whole thing is completely hypocritical. And we'll be sending a photocopy of this letter to Attorney General Philip Ruddock to show him that his claims on this program, that none of this, the legislation is retrospective, are in fact a crock.
Anyway, on a happier note, it is Father's Day this Sunday, and hopefully we'll all be weighted on hand and feet, you think? Hand and foot, if you've got one. But anyway...
We'll be given another pair of socks like we got given last year.
A new pair of undies, yeah.
Just socks to see the undies. Kids would be nice, actually. But just a bit of background to the origins of Father's Day reveals that it was not until 1972 that President Richard Nixon established the third Sunday in June as a permanent national observance day of Father's Day. This was 58 years after President Woodrow Wilson officially declared Mother's Day in the US. So, again, we're running a little bit behind. And it's also interesting because it was around 1972 when a concerted push started to eliminate fathers from the lives of their children and separate them from their property. This commenced with the creation of the much-despised family justice system.
Fascinating. And I believe one of the originators of Father's Day was a woman in America who had such a strong bond with her dad that when she saw this institution of Mother's Day coming along, she thought, well, you know, I really love my dad and he was such an important part of my dad. Why don't dads get a special day? And so...
Yeah, I'd like to honour my father.
That was Sonora Smart Dodd, and that was in 1909. So, again, it took 60-odd years to actually be proclaimed as Father's Day. And, of course, that's carried on here, and we celebrate ours in September, the first weekend of September. We are going to go to a little bit of music now, and then we'll come back with our US soldier, Eric Birch.
Yeah, this first piece is just to set the scene that we're going to be talking to a soldier who's served actively in Iraq after this. So this is I Was Only 19 by...
The Herd.
Stumble on the long march to the Viet jungle. Oh Christ, he mumbled as I drew that card. And my mates came to slap me on the back with due regard. We were the 6th Battalion and the next tour. We did Kangra and Shoalwater before we left. Rest assured. Seemed half of Townsville turned out to see us leave. And they lined the footpaths as we marched to the quay. The papers wrote it up like you would not believe. But we were looking to the future for a fast reprieve. The newspaper clippings show us young, strong and clean. Rockers, slouch hats, slung SLRs and greens. God help me. I was only 19. From Vung Tau in black helicopters, the Chinook pilot seemed relieved and knew he died when he dropped us. Feels like months running on and off landing pads. Letters to dad, cause it's like man he's sad. But he can't see the tents that we call home. Cans of VB and pinups on the lockers of chicks off TV. The noise, mosquitoes and the heat surprising. Like the first time you see an Agent Orange horizon. So please can you tell me doctor why I still can't get to sleep. The scars left in me. Night times just a jungle, dark and a bark. In M16 we keep saying rest in peace. What the hell's this rash that comes and goes? Don't suppose you can tell me what that means. God help me. I was only 19. Sent off on a 4-week long operation where every single step could be your last one. On 2 legs, it was sort of living hell, falling with the shells, war within yourself. But you wouldn't lay your mates down till they had you dusted off. So you closed your eyes and thought of something else. And someone yelled, contact. Another bloke swore. We hooked in for hours and a God Almighty roar. Then Frankie kicked to mine. The day that mankind kicked the moon. God help me. He was going home in June.
Hour leave in the bar at the Grand. I can still hear Frank, a screaming mess of bleeding flesh, couldn't retrieve his legs. The Anzac legend neglected to mention the mud, the fear, the blood, the tears, the tension. Dad's recollection beyond comprehension didn't seem quite real until we were sent in. The chaos and confusion, the fire and steel, heart shrapnel in my back I didn't even feel. God help me. I was only 19. So please can you tell me doctor why I can't get to sleep. I can't hardly eat and the sound of the Channel 7 chopper still chills me to my feet. It still fuels my grief. And what's this rash that comes and goes like the dreams. Can you tell me what that means. God help me. I was only 19. Mum and Dad and Denny saw the passing out parade at Pacapanyo. It was a long march from cadets. The 6th Battalion was the next to tour, and it was me who drew the card. We did Canungra and Shoalwater before we left. So please can you tell me, doctor, why I can't get to sleep. I can't hardly eat. And the sound of the Channel 7 chopper still chills me to my feet. It still fuels my grief. And what's this rash that comes and goes like the dreams. Can you tell me what that means? God help me. I was only 19. We're back with Dad's on the air.
We're just waiting for Eric Birch, an interview with Eric Birch, the U.S. serviceman who's been serving in Iraq. Are you with us, Eric?
Hello, this is Eric, and I'd like to wish a happy Father's Day to you, Peter, Ian, and Greg, and all the fathers in Australia.
Thank you, Eric.
Many countries share the dubious honour of being part of the coalition of the willing, whose governments saw fit to arbitrarily overthrow the government of another country. They did so, by and large, against the wishes of their own people and without the blessing of the UN. While the people overwhelmingly support their nation's sons and daughters, who are used as cannon fodder by their leaders' need to boost their own inflated egos, they will not continue to support these same governments, who also share a willingness to continue to condone a grotesque system of law that sees the removal of their nation's children from perfectly loving and caring parents. This happened to our next guest, Eric Birch, who is a US soldier who recently returned from his tour of duty in Iraq. Eric first contacted us by sending us a copy of a song he wrote about parental alienation. Eric pointed out the hypocrisy of these countries and made the profound observation that these countries are quite prepared to force their nation's young men and women to fight for the freedom of people in faraway foreign lands, while at home they deny these same young men and women the freedom to maintain a relationship with their own children. Hopefully we have Eric on the line now. Good morning, yes, Eric.
How are you? Good morning over there.
Good. Eric, welcome to Dad's on the Air. Great of you to join us. I just want to explain to the listeners that Eric and I have been hurling our music through cyberspace for a while now, hoping to draw attention to a horrific international family justice system that continues to terrorize parents and children around the globe. And it's great to have you on the show today, Eric. Eric, could I just start by asking you, your military forces are made up of volunteers. Could you tell us what it was that made you join the Army? Did you feel that perhaps that it was your patriotic duty to do so?
Well, I began a service in the United States Coast Guard as a sailor. That was in the 1980s. And after an 11-year break of service, after 9/11, I believed the propaganda was being put out at the time about the situation with nuclear weapons and all that in Iraq. And I and my brother both rejoined the service. And this time I went into the Army, where it was a totally different experience, and I was sent to Balad in Baghdad, and it was you know, totally voluntary, as many of my comrades that went over were. Sure.
Were you married before you joined the Army, or?
I was married previously while I was on active duty in the Coast Guard, and I have a wife and a small children at home now, in my current marriage, and I live nearby two teenage daughters. Well, the one 18-year-old just went off to college last year. And I've had a terrible time, due to parental alienation and the courts not helping, having a relationship with them. And what came to mind as we were deployed and going to our site where we're all getting ready to get shipped off, in the background I could see the courthouse where I'd spent many, many a time, going to different, in front of the judge for different issues. And the first thing that came to my mind was, that, we're being sent off to defend the rights of people in another nation, and just two blocks from here, I could never get a fair shake.
It's the hypocrisy of it is awful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the irony of that. A lot of these guys that being overseas for over a year, a lot of relationships can fall apart. Some are already fragile to begin with. Other things develop, and guys find themselves coming home from a situation after being deployed to the court systems and handling divorces and visitation with children. Over here, they use the same, custodial. They call it non-primary parent now, which is more politically correct, but it's the same old business.
Yes.
It's very fascinating how similar, judging from what you were said at the conference recently and what I saw online, is our situations in America, England, Australia, New Zealand, other places. We use the same adversarial system that has the same poor results.
So you're now happily married to Debbie and have two young children, Victor and Veronica.
That's right. I do know what it's like to enjoy a normal relationship.
Exactly.
Without someone working against you.
So the issue you have is with the fact that you and your two elder children, Kelly, 18, and Elizabeth, 15, have been denied your human rights to remain in contact with each other, haven't you? Really?
That's the issue. Yeah, early on, you had your mental health experts warn the judge that there was parental alienation and the mother was trying to develop a bad opinion of the father and these things, and judges here are worthless. I did a term paper in college and actually interviewed 10 of the local Superior Court judges to find out what their stance was, what their knowledge of parental alienation was, and it seems to be very poor, and that's what they're basing their decisions on.
So you started writing songs about your situation as a form of therapy for yourself as well, I guess?
Well, as a musician, a lot of times you go into your own personal experiences, and a lot of times if you have an inner grief, it's an outlet, a way of expressing yourself. It's fun to write fun songs, and the things that I've been sending to your station are a little bit on the darker side, but it is a dark subject at times.
Eric, we'll go and have a listen to one of your songs in just a moment, and that's the song called Daddy. It starts with a German poem. You better tell us what the words mean in English and how you regard this as relevant to your song, which talks about Paz, doesn't it?
Yes, I met an individual who's an engineering student in Germany. His name is Niles, and he has some contributions on a website called Free Sounds. And it's an existentialist poem, and it speaks about alienation, that people driving a wedge between themselves and it not getting fixed, just growing old without ever resolving these issues, and sadly enough, with estranged children of alienation, that everyone hopes that someday they'll be reunited and have a normal relationship, but it's not always guaranteed.
And what's the translation of the German poem?
There's one particular line that we have our differences. We drive a wedge between our alienations, but due to our alienation, and the only thing is we watch ourselves, our hair grow gray, mine as well as yours. That's the direct translation.
Okay, well, go and have a listen to this wonderful song by Eric Birch called Daddy.
Siehe, wir hassen, wir streiten. Es trennt uns Neigung und Meinung. Aber es bleichet indes dir sich die Locke wie mir.
Someday. that fail to live, fail to live, fail to live.
And we are speaking with Eric Birch, a US serviceman who has fought in Iraq and is not really happy with his government for condoning the removal of children from their parents and is now putting his feelings into music. Eric, you spoke to a psychologist who gave you a name for what was happening to you and your children, which was, of course, PAS, Parental Alienation Syndrome. Does this help you to at least have a name for it?
Well, once you understand what's going on, there is a certain amount of empowerment. But at the same time, when you bring that knowledge to the court and you have experts behind you saying, yeah, this is what it is, it fits it exactly, and somebody please help me, and then the court just drops the ball and allows it to continue, then it's worse than it was before. It's like it's as if they know what the disease is. They're the ones empowered to make a change, and they do nothing.
It's like futility squared.
That's right. It just compounds all the problems, knowing that it's out there, it's understood. And there's a bunch of ignorant people either denying its existence or not wanting to do anything about it.
Yeah, I remember back when I first came across it, it helped me to really have a name to it, and it set me on a journey of discovery by which the more I learned, the more you discover the sheer enormity of this cruel phenomenon, which is inflicting on innocent children and their parents around the world by an industry who is driven by power and greed. That was my sort of wake-up call, I think, getting a name for it.
Yeah, once you understand, I read every scholarly journal there was out there. I realized the different factors in play, you know, the remarriage issue and just using leverage in the courts because they're designed to make it very easy to go in there, use a couple false allegations, put a stop to everything normal that's going on, and buy time so that they can eventually just squeeze you out altogether.
Just for the listeners' sake, there's a very good book out called Parental Alienation Syndrome by Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein, who we interviewed on this program a month or so ago.
I do recognize that author among many other great researchers out there that are trying to enlighten people as to what we can do to first recognize it. And I don't know, then it's up to the courts because they still have the power to do whatever is the next step.
Eric, the system finds you living only 2 miles from your older children, but they do not even know their other sister and brother, who also form part of their biological family. How is it possible that they do not even know one another, living so close?
Well, the mother did everything in her possible, within her rights and things that were not legal to put a stop to our normal relationship. I abandoned my rights because it was getting to the point where, the next step was, sexual things or other things that could take away my own children because, it played out over years, first saying that, maybe I was a drunk or maybe I beat them or maybe I threatened them. And all the years, the children, they defended me and they found at no time any wrongdoing on my part, but it just kept me with a mountain of legal bills each time I had to go forward. And she was never punished for perjury, her false claims, and it just came to the point where things were very tense, and I was worried that I was going to lose even my younger children with the tactics.
Yes. As part of a college paper you wrote, you interviewed Superior Court judges, which I guess over here are Supreme Court judges. What did you learn from that experience?
Well, I was, as a student, which I really was, taking psychology classes and the such, I interviewed them to find out what their knowledge of this was and how they dealt with it. And they said whenever there was a claim of abuse, or they put it, a stop to the father's involvement until they could get down to what was going on. And a lot of them didn't even recognize parental alienation is something valid. You know, it's being discredited by the feminist movement still. And, you know, psychologists can come into court, but it's really up to the judge's discretion to make any changes. They can just continue as they have been over the years, and the situation just keeps getting worse.
You've also written about the death of your father and how your elder children, even at that time, were denied contact with their grandparents. Can you tell us a little about that? Or?
Yeah, my father was dying of cancer, and what happens in these situations, it's not just men that lose out, it's the women too. It's the grandparents, the aunts, the nieces, the sisters. So men and women are victims of this on both sides. It's not just a man-women issue. But, you know, my father, he wanted to see his children, and my ex just felt that maybe cutting off my entire family was the route she wanted to go to totally eliminate any trace of a father in these children's lives.
That's incredible. That just seems just completely heartless, you know, to the children, to everybody. I mean, it's just absolutely selfish approach. It's amazing that a court would back that up, that they wouldn't see through that.
And they know it's going on. Yep.
And as I went off to war, I wasn't sure if I was coming back. And, you know, I just wanted to say goodbye to my kids, you know, let them know that I loved them and, you know, whatever happened. And, but, you know, that would have, the amount of time that I had before I left and the amount of red tape that I'd have to go through, it was impossible to even get that goodbye.
Eric, this coming Sunday is Father's Day in Australia, and unfortunately many fathers will not see or hear from their much-loved children. You made a statement to reporters the night before you left for Iraq when you were asked by one of them what you thought of the war. And you said, and I quote, "It is one thing for our country to ask us to put our lives on hold while we fight for the freedom of others across the globe, when in fact the lives of many of the fathers in the army have been put on hold indefinitely in the county courthouse 1 mile away from the fort by a system that cares very little for our own liberties." Is this view expressed much in the military, as the same abuse of our service personnel takes place here as well?
There's a lot of fathers that I've met, and there's some really outrageous stories. You know, I'm sure you've heard some of, you know, guys held as prisoner of war while their child support piles up and they get back and you know, they're running into trouble. You know, ridiculous things like this.
Yeah, we've heard stories of men actually being put in jail over there, getting back from Iraq to be clapped in irons and thrown in the slammer for failing to pay child support while they were away fighting for their country. Do you know any?
I verified that.
Yep.
Yeah, many of these servicemen and women actually find that while they're away on active duty, their assets and children have been removed from them. I would imagine this happens in the States as well.
Yeah, these men are powerless to do anything because they're so far away and so far removed, connected. Of course, soldiers and sailors have rights while they're gone to keep their job with their employer and that type of thing, and that doesn't always follow through. But when it comes to situations and divorce and that, they have no control in their lives whatsoever, and they do not have the upper hand to be there and make a difference. And even if they were there, you know, there's a lot of times when, you know, you can appear at every court, a hearing, and it doesn't matter, you know.
What also happens with returned service personnel is that they end up suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, as often happens with non-custodial parents following the loss of their children. These poor wretches are then set upon by the child support agency, who drive them into a suicidal state. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I myself have been diagnosed with PTSD prior to my departure and upon returning. It's every time I saw the Great Seal of the State of Washington, which, you know, flag which I fought under the National Guard, I got a pit in my stomach because it was a trigger that I associated every time I stood in front of the judge and that Great Seal was standing behind him, that there was a great injustice going on and it was falling on deaf ears and there was a lot of his ego involved. And it's, you know, you can't look at that seal or, you know, hear an explosion go off without feeling that all over again as far as the post-traumatic stress.
Eric, unfortunately, we have just about run out of time. You've recently written and recorded a song about the experiences of military personnel entitled Liberty Expires. Can you tell us briefly what that song is about?
It was originally a story of three generations of soldiers, all who were buried side by side. And the term Liberty Expires is the nautical term. You know, sailors, they leave the ship and they lose their liberty when it's time to come back, basically.
Yes.
And it's just an analogy for our Constitution and our Supreme Court in the United States defines your relationship with your children as one of your liberties that can't be taken away. And it was just those two themes put together that is a protest song about what we're speaking.
Eric, thank you so much for coming on Dads on the Air. We really appreciate what you are doing and hope that you will continue to write many more songs, as we are doing. Ian and I write songs all the time about this global travesty of justice inflicted of children on their parents. And we hope everything goes okay for you.
Thank you, gentlemen. I totally support what you're doing there. It's Dads on the Air.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
We wish you well with your new family.
Thank you.
We'll go out with a new song. So, listeners, this is Eric Birch with Liberty Expires.
Justice delayed is justice denied, but for that justice men have died. For the love of liberty they cross the wires, while back at home that liberty expires.
That's liberty. I guess I'm leaving to go. This won't stand in our way. Duty's got our life on hold. Missions first, they say. But we will last.
Men die for ideals in foreign lands, while back at home, their children ripped from their hands. Children are liberty, but like slaves are sold. The promise broken, a life on hold. A family torn, a nation divided. The judge cares not, injustice decided. The enemy within, the domestic liar. Good men, casualties of friendly fire.
In a quiet war, ears ringing from the day before Christmas, 1944. The fire ceased and still, no time to think or dream, just waiting like a rabbit in a bloody kill. Taken away. Somewhere across the ocean came a boy as a man. Somewhere across the trenches is a man like myself. And freedom is left for those with a life. Attention. Operation numbers, they're passing away. Freedom, freedom, give me liberty. But it's years since I've been home. Taking my last breath, I fear my liberty is near. On his tag, and the widow's tag, will it ever be the same?
yesterday, another Christmas war. Year 2004. A new hotel for her grandson here. The body of her husband dear. It's all summed up to just the names and the years. Served the family's name, left the family's tears. Liver and cheese inspired.
Crimes against humanity, too many to list them. Dads missing in action, casualties of the system, injured for life and prisoners of this war. It makes you wonder what they were fighting for. Buried as heroes, then buried by paper. They fought for liberty, though the courts still rape her. Fair treatment of men, a soldier's desire. We then cannot accept that liberty should also expire.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. As regular listeners will know, last month I was in Washington, D.C. in the States at a conference called Boys and the Boy Crisis. And one of the most memorable speakers at that conference was Matt O'Connor from Fathers for Justice in the UK. And he gave a really fantastic speech, which I managed to record. And we're going to have a listen to it now. My apologies in advance for the quality of the audio on this occasion.
When I was in court, I was in court for a year and a half, in and out, in a contact centre, which, frankly, I burned them all down, for no reason at all. And I said to the judge at the last hearing, because I was prepared to walk away from my children, an approach which is called the retreat strategy. And I said to the judge, I will put you out of the job, come hell or high water, whatever it takes, however long it takes. And at that hearing, we stepped outside the court, myself, my ex-wife, and a court welfare officer. And all of a sudden, it all changed. When I was going to go, they thought, shit, this guy's not going to carry on the hamster wheel of grief, the hamster wheel of the family justice system. This guy's gone. He's gone, and he's going to come back. The biggest problems we've got in the UK are the civil servants, who even the politicians who the odd initiative that is floated get shot down because the civil servants do not want to see the change that we want to see. They want to keep the system, protect the status quo, protect the system. I went to this meeting and I sat there and the guy said to me, a civil servant said to me, you have to prove it's in your child's interest for them to see. And I said to him, I said, if you were to be dangled by your ankles 70 feet up outside the window, you carry on, mate. And the other woman sitting there, woman Sally Field, who was head of this department, said, you know, the usual stuff, every case is different, you know, yada, 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 all the reasons we act in the child's best interest. But they say they're acting in the child's best interest. Prove it. Show me. Where is the evidence? So I was saying yesterday about the tub of ice cream, where we know more what happens to the tub of ice cream once it's been sold. We know what happens to the children who have been through the court system, because nobody, certainly in the United Kingdom, has kept any records on the outcomes for those children. And so the meeting concluded with me sort of turning around and sort of saying, I'll be back. I said, because I won't be skewered on a family law barbecue like the rest of them. I said, you know, once in a while, somebody comes along and says, this ain't happening. And I said, when I come back, there'll be 100 more behind me. I said, I will start the biggest campaign this country's ever seen. And we'll come back. And we did, and we showed a lot of people yesterday the 200 Father Christmases in the video. who stormed the lobby of the Lord Chancellor's Department, and as we were rattling along past Parliament, on the way, it's a bizarre sight. 200 file of Christmases on open top bus. I rang her up and spoke to Sally Fitz. Ah, Sally, Matt O'Connor, Fathers for Justice. Oh, hi, Matt, how are you? Yeah, great. I said, do you remember that last meeting we had? I said, you know, I said I'd come back with 200 people. I said, we should be there in about 2 minutes. We've had, you know, 6,000 years, whatever, of the family, the social unit of society. You know, 40 years ago, fathers were seen as pillars of the community, respected, valued, looked up to. Now, we're demonised, we're a bit dodgy, deadbeats. I was doing some work in the last year with young offenders and charities and people who deal with children who are likely to or have become young offenders. And I went to one charity and it illustrated to me the problems we faced. How the feminisation of NGOs and charities is actually contributing to the problem, not solving the problem. And when I spoke to this CEO, she was saying that, you know, the boys that they deal with are often, if the fathers aren't around, the mothers are often very critical of those boys because they see their ex-partner in those boys. So the boys start off with a bit chip on their shoulder, a little bit angry, they're brought up by women, they're taught by women, they have no male role model at all. And this was an absolutely enlightening occasion for me. Because I used to think maybe this sort of thing was a bit exaggerated. I thought maybe, surely no, this can't be happening. And we talked about doing something on Father's Day, and she said to me, well, we can't call it Father's Day, a Father's Day protest. And I thought, huh? I said, you just said how terrible it is. These boys are growing up without their fathers. We just used the word father all the way through the meeting. I said, well, what do we call it? If we don't call it Father's Day. We said, well, can't we use the words positive male role models? Positive male role models day. Positive male role models for justice. Doesn't exactly trip off the tongue, does it? And when you speak to some of the other people who work in this industry, these people are responsible for presiding over a social catastrophe, pretending that they're working to solve an issue, whilst at the same time absolutely fueling it. So if you speak to some of them, anybody can be a dad these days. It's fantastic. You know, not just an uncle, or a new boyfriend, a brother. If you've got a bit of a butch aunt who's got a bit of facial hair, she could be a father figure. I'm just waiting to find out that if you buy a goldfish that's got far more quality qualities. So what's happened to dads? What's happened to father figures? What's happened to religion? Our father. In the name of the father. Yeah, in the churches, certainly in the United Kingdom, the main church, the Church of England, the name Father has all but been vanquished. If you go to Christians in the United Kingdom, the priests don't say, you know, they have the mother, they have the baby. But the priests go, the priest won't say, well, where's the other chap? You know, that guy called Dad. They don't even ask a question. You just have your hairy faced aunt standing there, you know. It's a positive male role model. I still can't say it. So the question you keep asking, we must all ask the whole time, is why? How? But to some extent, it's because of the social dynamics have changed. the parental interdependence has gone because mother's out of the States. This monstrous super nanny who steps in to replace people like me, replace people like you. Single motherhood is a lifestyle choice today. You know, it's like getting a new car, a new handbag, a new man. So fatherhood is under a sustained, but it's an insidious attack. That's what we've got to be a bit clever about how we approach these things. I think historically, fathers' groups have channeled their anger in a very bad way. We've got to fight back. Not for us. I'm not doing it for myself. I'm sorted. I could turn around and say, I'm a white jack. I'm off. But we do it for our children. This losing the parent is like an emotional amputation. It's a living bereavement. Boys who growing up without a father are the boys who will turn to gang culture with other males. And gangs will then fight gangs. And this is now happening. The United Kingdom. There's a great line in that Manning Street Preacher song, I don't know if any of you guys ever heard of it. If you tolerate this, then your children will be next. So this must stop. We have to stop this. We must act. We must spread this gospel of equality of common sense. We must believe that we can be the change we want to see. What we started in the United Kingdom, this mad adventure that is Fathers for Justice, has seen us fighting them on the streets, fighting them in the courtrooms, fighting them in the media, fighting them in our parliament. We've taken the battle to every institution in the battle for equality, in the battle to save our children. This is the price of failure. In the United Kingdom, this is the price of family breakdown. This has just happened now, this year. I read the names of the boys who died. Abu Shaheen, 18, stabbed. Martin Binnigan, 14, stabbed. Ben Hitchcock, 16, stabbed. Anaka Kanashia, 17, shot. Sean Simpson, 18, stabbed. Daniel Johnson, 17, stabbed. Paul Earhart, 14, stabbed. Adam Regis, 15, stabbed. Kajo Yenga, 16, stabbed. Billy Cox, 15, shot. Michael DeFumo, 15, shot. James Andre Smartford, 16, shot. Jevon Henry, 18, stabbed. So that's the cost of family law. This wasn't happening until a few months ago in the United Kingdom. But there is a solution. You guys are the solution. In the words of Martin Luther King, I'm going to finish by saying this. The arc of the moral universe bends towards justice. That justice is here. That justice is the Father's revolution. It is time to ask not what America can be, but what you can do to transform your country. Thank you.
Always been a single man. lived up here, along with all these other single men, with a ring around the bar and a cigarette butt in my beer. And I haven't always been a lonely man, and I haven't always lived alone. Do you know I haven't always drunk this much? But hey, before you cut me down, just try standing in my shoes, 'cause I don't have to hear one word out of this mouth. The other day, I care what you say, every Saturday is Father's Day. You might call it sad, you might call me mad, but I've got one who calls me. And all the other blokes that live up here know how to leave a man alone. And not a bad old bunch that live up here, I'll bet you know that it's not family and it's not home. While of a darling wife but once I had, well, I'm pleased to say that she still talks to me. I try not to think of what went wrong, 'cause if I said that I was right, she might say that she was right, and the only rights I care about are visiting the rights, yeah. Every Saturday is Father's Day. You might call it sad, you might call me mad, but I've got one who calls me dad. We go where he wants to go, we do what he wants to do. I tell him everything I do, anything to prove. Yeah, I do anything to prove. And every Saturday I will do just what he says, 'cause each and every Saturday is Father's Day. You might call it sad, you might call me mad, but it don't feel so bad when he calls me. When he calls me dad, yeah, he calls me dad. I haven't always been a single man.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. On the line, we have with us Jacinta Horgood from the Australian Institute for Suicide Research and Prevention at Griffith University. Jacinta, are you there?
Yes, good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Jacinta. Now, you're conducting a study at the moment. Would you like to tell our listeners a bit about it?
Yes, well, the study is actually investigating the impact of marital and de facto separation on men, and particularly the reason for this is because of our very recent findings in Queensland on suicide in men that have demonstrated a 22-fold increased risk of suicide in men who are separated compared to men who are even divorced or single or in relationships. And so this is particularly concerning, and it's the first time ever that the Australian Commonwealth Government have funded such a study, we don't know at all what the particular risk factors are for suicide in men who are going through separation and marital or de facto. And I guess the other thing that's of major interest to us as well is what differentiates men who actually don't become suicidal as a result of separation compared to men who do. And so we're very interested in defining what the particular factors are. And the best way for us to do that is to examine what separated men themselves think about the process of separation. What are the meaningful things to them that cause them distress, that lead them to feeling depressed and down, and that feel like there's no other way to cope with the difficult situation that they're in? And so our survey is a 30-minute survey that we're just asking men to please help us with. They do one now and one again in 6 months' time. And we give them a reimbursement for their participation because we know that it is a bit can be a bit difficult talking about this sort of stuff, and we very much appreciate their contribution.
Fantastic. So what kind of men do you actually want to involve in the survey?
Well, we need men 18 years of age and over who've been separated in the last 12 months.
Okay, so that's de facto or married relationships.
That's right. Yeah, that's correct. And we actually need 100 more men, so we're quite a way off our target at the moment. I just can't emphasise how critical it is for us to be able to directly inform the Australian government on the policies and procedures that we need at a clinical level to support and also to prevent at the legal level as well.
Absolutely. There's been so much anecdotal evidence over the years that men who have recently separated or divorced have increased risk of suicide, but there hasn't been a lot of research. So this is really groundbreaking stuff. It's as you say, it's absolutely crucial that we get this data there and find out the truth about men and suicide and separation.
That's right, yeah.
So Jacinda, how can they get in touch with you if they want to take part in the study?
Okay, well, the most direct and simple way is to email. The email is Marital Study, and that is MARITALSTUDY, one word, at Griffiths, griffith.edu.au. Alternatively, they can just go straight onto the Griffith University website and search under the Australian Institute for Suicide Research and Prevention, and straight away on the front page is access to the downloadable survey online. So there's no contact that has to be done with face-to-face with anyone here at the Institute if they don't wish for that to happen.
Great. So they'll be sent out a pack with information on the study and also be reimbursed for the time that they take to take part in the study.
Yep, exactly, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well, if any of our listeners are in that situation, if you've been recently separated within the last 12 months and you're over 18, please email maritalstudy@griffith.edu.au. Jacinta Horgood, thank you so much for coming on Dads on the Air today.
Yeah, thank you very much, Greg, and thank you everyone out there who's going to help us very much.
Cheers. Thank all you. The best.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, on the line from sunny Wollongong, we have with us from the Fatherhood Foundation, Mr. Warwick Marsh. Warwick, are you there?
Greg, it's good to hear your voice.
Oh, fantastic. We've got a busy show today, mate. So it's great, always great to have you on the show. So you were there with my two colleagues here, Peter and Ian, at the Lone Fathers National Convention at Parliament House a few weeks ago. What was your take on how that all went?
I thought the Lone Fathers Conference was a great conference. It was great to see a very valuable contribution by Dads on Air from John Stapleton, speaking for the team there, and pointing out there's still a lot to be done in the area of family law reform. Unfortunately, there's a bit of a snow job going on at the present moment that says that all our problems are over. If all our problems are over, why am I getting phone calls from men who can't see their children because the court has ruled that and they can't even get through the family relationship centres because there's no real teeth in the setup, you know.
And we just read a letter this morning on air from Legal Aid to a father, basically whose case had been settled 2 years ago, harassing him and threatening him with fines unless he contacted them and was ready to go into mediation over matters that were settled a long time ago.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, Ian, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Warwick. Good morning.
By the way, it's very important to understand that Sir Alfred the Great, King Alfred the Great, was not around the 10th century. It was the 9th century, okay?
It was the 21st century.
No, Ian, it's a very good point. And so, unfortunately, there's still a lot of... there's a lot of spin happening out there, and we need to see a lot more work done in this reform. Ultimately, they should have gone ahead with the proposition that the Prime Minister put up in 3 years ago to actually investigate the whole idea of the presumption of shared parenting, which was basically sort of conveniently tipped to one side, and they've spent about $500-600 million on a system that we actually said back then was going to be another layer of bureaucracy, and it unfortunately does seem to be that.
Well, we've had evidence of that today. Unfortunately, I don't know if you were listening to the beginning of the show, but one of our mates has just been contacted to come in for mediation at the Family Relationships Centre.
Yeah, a good father being harassed.
And his case was wound up 2 years ago under the old system. He's now being dragged in under the new system. So there's obviously some lot of work to do to tidy things up and get them working properly.
Yes, unfortunately, the endemic sort of anti-male bias is still... highly prevalent, and but you know, together we can make a difference. And I think really that's what the Lone Fathers Conference was all about. It was about a bunch of guys getting together, and it was wonderful to see some great women down there speaking on our behalf too.
It was
one woman's voice is worth ten men's voices at the present moment in this battle for a fair go. And of course, Greg, it was really great to have you down at Parliament House on the 20th of June, again representing Dads on Air, speaking to our parliamentarians at a very high level, five shadow ministers and three cabinet ministers and numerous politicians and parliamentarians, about the need for more parity for men in the area of health, boys' education, family law, delivery of government services, and just the fact that we are indeed the biggest minority group in Australia today, 49.2%. 49.2%, the biggest minority in the group, but... group in the country, but certainly overlooked to a great extent, unfortunately.
That's right. That was an exciting event. That was the Men and Fathers Family Friendly Policy Forum at Canberra in Parliament House. And I believe, Warwick, you've just published a document with the outcomes of that particular forum, which we're going to put online on the Dads on the Air website today. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, it's a very exciting document, and again, The team at Dads on Air should be congratulated, because James Adams, who was one of your
partners, one of our presenters, yep.
James was the guy that really put all the work together to publish that document, collate everyone's points of view. The document is quite diverse. There's family groups, there's pro-family groups, there's pro-marriage groups, there's family law groups, there's men's health groups, there's fatherhood groups, and education groups like ourselves, because we're not essentially about family law, we're more about the sort of the way forward in the big picture. And we all got together, 33 people, and presented for the whole day at Parliament House, meeting also with Senator Barnaby Joyce and also Steve Fielding. And it was a fruitful day. I don't know how you felt about it, Greg.
Oh, look, it was a really exciting day. I've never seen such a wide-ranging collection of politicians from all political persuasions listening to men and fathers' concerns. And a lot of them were voiced by, as you say, really strong women like Maggie Hamilton and Julie Geggie from the Family Action Centre at Newcastle University. We were all speaking very passionately, and I believe that they really listened and took our concerns on board and couldn't have asked for a better result. And I guess time will tell once we kick into election mode whether they're actually going to take notice.
I think that's the question, Greg. We'll actually take notice, but I'm hoping they will. Certainly they listened to us and they did hear us, and you know, it was very well articulated. Your speech actually in particular was I thought was very moving, and it was great to see a lot of our parliamentary friends in the Labor Party actually thinking. And I remember one of the ladies there who was a staunch feminist saying this is what it was like in the feminist movement in the 70s when women were trying to find a feminine space and trying to understand who they were as women and to come to grips with the realities of their gender and fighting off the feelings of exploitation. Well, here we are, the beginning of the 21st century, and it's many men feel just like a lot of women felt in the 60s and the 70s. We sort of discarded in many ways. We die in 4 or 5 years younger. We've got a death rate in suicide that's 4-1 to our sisters, women folk, and yeah, there's a lot of battles going on, particularly in the family law area. There's enormous battles, and there's still this incredible gender bias, which is entrenched in the family law court and the child support agency. And certainly, our time in Canberra on the 20th of June was, I believe, very important. That document will be up on the Dads on Air website, I believe, in the next 24 hours.
Absolutely.
And it's the sort of thing you could grab it off the website and then flick it to your parliamentarian or copy it out and print it out and take it around there. You'll find something that you believe in there, I guarantee it. If you're interested in men's issues, father's issues, family issues, marriage issues, you will find something that is close to your heart. And please take it along. And in the lead up to Father's Day, if you can post it to the papers and send out press releases.
Yes, Warwick, Father's Day on Sunday. Do you, on behalf of the fatherhood movement, have any thing to say on that?
I think it's very important to appreciate Father's Day, just like Mother's Day. They're both very, very important days. I think we must not forget the rock from which we've been hewn. In other words, we do come from somebody else. We do come from somebody else. And somebody else brought us into the world, and somebody else changed our nappies. And somebody else, you know, took us to football training and took us to school and put the money on the table so that there would be food there. And so we all have fathers and mothers. It's very sad, of course, for some men that they don't know their father or their mother. But the great majority of people do. And Father's Day is a day to celebrate dads. And it's about, you know, going all out for your dad. And if you're a dad, you're receiving it. Make sure you say thank you, whether it's a... you know, some socks and jocks, or it could be a red sports convertible. Make sure you say thank you.
Absolutely wise words there from Warwick Marsh. Warwick, unfortunately, we've run out of time today. Thank you once again for coming on Dads on the Air, and all the best for a fantastic Father's Day on Sunday.
And again, thank you, guys, and keep up the awesome work. You guys did an awesome work, and we greatly appreciate your stand for the issues that really count. It's about relationship, it's about friendship, it's about dads and mums and families and our children, and that's what we've got to put first, and that's what's happening. So God bless you. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Warwick. Too, Warwick. Great
thank
to
you,
hear
mate.
From you.
Bye.
He went to war when he was 15.
He was a decent
Second
man.
World War.
He was an honest
really
man.
Nice fellow. Very,
and
very loving.
I think he's given
and
to
he
me.
Cherished all of us.
He's probably the coolest guy that I know that's in his late 70s.
Having to belong to the community and do as much as you can for the community.
He's a very mellow person.
To contact him and tell him what I feel. Better than I expected, actually. Yeah, it was good.
He was never really there for me.
And it doesn't matter what happens, he's always really level.
Never a demonstrative person. Like, I didn't expect him to sort of be gushing or anything like that, but he sort of basically said, I feel the same way as what you explained to me. It was really good.
Yeah, he was a great example to me. And, yeah, my father had a wonderful career.
He was always there for me
did very well,
as he still is.
In terms of success. But
wonderful father and friend. And
full of himself.
I just hope that I can do half as good a job as he did.
He was always
fair,
very...
straightforward, honest.
Easy to get along with.
Great sense of humour.
He was a wonderful
and,
gentleman.
And he still carries those qualities now.
It was very sad to see him go, which he did gracefully.
One of those things I reckon is that he keeps life very entertaining.
Understanding of people and not
he never knew what's going to happen next. He loves
my
a mad
dad,
life.
He's got a great sense of humour.
Me, like him.
He's got a really good outlook
on life.
I
suppose as I've got older, I've realised I'm more like him than I thought I ever was.
Never put yourself in a situation where you need to cross the road to avoid somebody. And that is pretty much how he lives his life.
My dad's great guy.
Never thought I was anything
always,
like him, to be honest. We had our head-butting sessions for many, many years until I was about 25.
My dad is an aspect of spirit God. He's a lovely man. He's a generous man. And I love him very much.
But I always respected him. And I ended up doing exactly the same things that
people.
He was doing his life.
What has always struck me is his hands. They're big, welder's
the same
hands.
Life as he used to.
Builder's hands.
Seems.
When as a child, I remember him building a yacht out of steel, 40-foot yacht that just sort of rose above the fence of the yard, and I just remember always being quite proud that my dad could build anything.
And I was there when he died, and I always respected him.
My dad, two memories, the back of the newspaper, we used to go fishing. And
my father's grief.
I think I'm a person
never
of routine
really
like him. Lots of things I'm not
enjoyed
like
his
him.
Life, I don't
yeah.
think.
I struggle hard to do those things.
My dad takes me surfing.
It'd be nice to be able to talk to him sometime, but I can't.
Such passion that it will stay with me forever.
On the line from northern New South Wales, I have Colin George, who is the director of the Fatherhood Project. One of the initiatives of the Fatherhood Project is the Fatherhood Festival, which is on this coming Father's Day weekend. Colin, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
It's a pleasure to be here, Greg.
Can you tell me a little bit about the history of the Fatherhood Festival? How long has it been running now?
This is our fourth year, and it's fantastic to see so many fathers and children and families coming to it now. It started off really from a CD project that we put together in 2003, and it was a CD about fathers and fatherhood, and many of the Australia's best artists were put on it. And what happened was we started putting on concerts, and as we were putting on these concerts, people would be coming up afterwards saying, oh, look, you know, you've inspired me to pick up the phone and speak to my father or to my children. Mm. And it was like, oh, there's something in this. And we started having long conversations with various fathers and various children of fathers and so forth. And it felt that there wasn't a huge amount of positive images of fathers around here. There's a lot of negative images of the sort of the stupid dad and or the dumb dad or the, you know, the pedophile or the all these negative images of dads.
Right.
So we put together a festival where fathers could actually celebrate who they are and start valuing their role. So that's where it started.
Fantastic. And did some of those original artists from the CD, have they been performing at the festivals over the years?
Yes. Well, the original CD included John Butler, Archie Roach, a whole heap of people, and those people have definitely supported us over these years. Last year we had Pete Murray and John Butler actually perform at the festival, and that was great. Archie is just such a soulful singer as well.
Mm.
And but it's more than just the music concerts. We also try to, for example, this year we're going out a little bit on the edge. We've got a public discussion, a forum called Sex and What We Teach Our Children. And that will definitely be reasonably controversial because we've got the Uncle Project, which is a local mentoring organisation. They're going to be running a kind of a game show and showing us what attitudes are out there in the community around sex and teenagers. So, yeah, that's going to be great.
That'll be fascinating.
Yeah, and then, I mean, one of the really highlights of the events is the Sunday where you get to see a lot of fathers and families just hanging out together in the big showgrounds. You know, there's literally thousands of them. It's wonderful.
Fantastic. So how many people do you normally get along to the festival?
Around about 5,000.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I'm actually going to make it up this year for the first time, so right. I'm really looking forward to that. It sounds like it sounds like a really unique event. Do you know of anything of this kind that's held anywhere in the world, a festival for that celebrates fatherhood in this way?
There are a few things on Father's Day where they have picnics and sort of celebrations, but there's nothing with the scope of a three-day fatherhood festival where you've got music, you've got discussion, you've got photographic images of dads all around the place. You've got lots of community groups coming together to talk about fatherhood. Yeah, no, there's nothing like that in the world.
Wow, it sounds fantastic. And obviously, this weekend we've got the big, the APEC event is on in Sydney, so they're encouraging Sydneysiders to get out of town, and so where better to go than to the wonderful northern New South Wales and to Bangalore and to take part, hopefully, in this wonderful festival.
Yeah, and the great, I mean, it's such a beautiful place as well, and we've got lovely weather up here this week. And we're also, we've been honoured that NAPCAN has chosen the Fatherhood Festival to launch their National Child Protection Week. So it's great that they realised the importance of fathers in looking after their children in Child Protection Week.
Oh, that's fantastic, and that hopefully will further help to eradicate those stereotypes of sort of bad dads that seem to be out there, because as most fathers know, there's no one really better in terms of protecting children than someone's own dad.
Well, that's right. The research all says that if you have an actively engaged, loving father, your children are five times less likely to suffer child abuse.
That's great to be getting that message out there.
Yes.
So, Colin, would you like to tell us briefly just a little bit about some of the other things that the Fatherhood program does? I believe you also are involved in some antenatal programs for new dads?
Yes, we looked at what we felt was the most effective way of improving the confidence of men, and particularly as fathers, and we've decided that the expectant fathers were the ones to talk to first, because they're at a point in their life where it is, they're open, they are looking for new ideas. So what we do is we take the dads out of the antenatal classes, and we frame the discussion around the adventure of fatherhood and the fact that it is a kind of an initiation. It's a different level of initiation. So that's what we look at. And it's just wonderful to see these men feel so much more confident. I mean, it's quite a lot of fun as well. We have, you know, nappy changing competitions and all sorts of stuff. But it's also framed in that concept that, you know, that really this really is an initiation into a different level of manhood. And what happens there is that, so they get the skill, they get the knowledge, but it's mainly men talking to men, because quite often on this level, we don't get men talking to men. So, and luckily and thankfully, we're hearing that more and more. Men are setting up better support networks for themselves. And what happens after this, we bring in new dads to mentor the expectant dads.
Fantastic. I was just going to ask, I imagine a lot of new dads, they've never had a kid yet, they're probably quite nervous and a bit scared of what's to come. So it must be very reassuring to meet with a dad who's been a dad for a while and who's getting used to the role and who can share their stories.
Absolutely. I mean, you can see that. I mean, they're much more interested in the new dads than obviously anybody else in the room, which is great. And the next level that we're taking it to is we want to see a circle of men mentoring throughout their lives, so that in 10 years' time we have communities around Australia where these expectant fathers programs are running, but we've also got dads of maybe 15-year-olds mentoring dads of 12-year-olds. And that sort of thing, so that we've got this whole circle of men that are actually in a network looking after each other and supporting each other.
Wow. The Fatherhood Festival is on this weekend. All the events are being held at the Bangalow A&I Hall and Showgrounds in wonderful northern New South Wales. The Friday night concert is Kev Carmody and Lior. That's this Friday night at 7:30 p.m. There are parenting workshops and discussions, photographic exhibitions. Saturday night, the Theatre of Men. You want to talk a little bit about that event? Sounds very interesting.
That's another one of those on-the-edge events. It's wonderful. We've got five brilliant local actors. Well, actually, it starts with a group of men called Men What Sing. They're one of the only, I think it's one of the only two all-male a cappella choirs in Australia. So they're going to start the event, and they're just a brilliant a cappella group. And I think there's 12 of them. Then we're going to have an interactive theatrical presentation by some local actors where they're set in a men's group. So the whole action is set in a men's group. And then we're going to have, after the break, Ranald Allen, who is an international facilitator and one of the main organisers of Pathways, which is the boys' passage from boy to manhood.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to come and do something very special. He's going to lead us through a journey from our grandparents' point of view, our grandfather's point of view, looking down at our father. So that's going to be an amazing event.
Wow.
Something that will move a lot of people.
That sounds fantastic. And then, of course, on the Sunday, there's the Fatherhood Family Day, all day at the Bangalow Showgrounds. There's an outdoor concert between 10 and 3, and then a sunset concert from 4 till 6. There's a kids' show for the little ones, the fantastic Joel Salom. He's hilarious at midday. So if you can make it along to the Fatherhood Festival, it was guaranteed to be a fantastic long weekend. And Colin George, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us today on Dads on the Air.
My pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Cheers. All the best.
Bye now.
And that was our Father's Day special for 2007. We hope you enjoyed the show, and from all the dads on the air team, we wish you all a very enjoyable Father's Day on Sunday. We also like to thank all our guests who appeared on the program today, and hope that you will join us again next week when we'll be speaking with two authors, Dr. Paul Nathanson and Dr. Catherine Young, who have written two very important books that uncover the underlying contempt for men and boys in our culture today. That'll be an interesting show. We will also be joined by Mark Dersterich from New York, who has written a rock opera about his experiences as a father separated from his family and the subsequent heartache experienced by all the family. Mark is currently touring the US with this production, and will be bringing the show to Australia in July next year as part of the Creativity Summit to be held at Newcastle. So until next week, when we look forward to your company, take care and keep on listening. When there's a-